You may be seated. Our third case this morning is 2021-1172 in the matter of JF, an adjudicated neglected child, and JAF, an adjudicated dependent child. For the appellant, Mr. Miller.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the court. My name is Mark Miller. I represent the appellant, the mother in this case, with the initials LA. She is the mother of the minor children, JA and JAF. I request 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. A parent's right to the custody of her child has been deemed paramount by this court. Further, the termination of parental rights is the family law equivalent of the death penalty in a criminal case. And as such, parties, including a child, must be afforded every protection the law allows. Here, we are urging this court to reverse the Fourth District Court of Appeals out of Jackson County, which we believe imposed a too high of a standard for children when appointing them separate counsel when the guardian's recommendation differs from the child's wishes. We believe the Fourth District erred in misinterpreting this court's decision in Williams, which is the leading case on this issue decided by this court in 2004. In Williams, the child at issue was 6 years old, and this court strictly, specifically interpreted revised code 2151.352, and it read the plain language of the statute and held that a child is in fact a party in these kind of proceedings when termination of parental rights are at issue, a party. And therefore, the child is entitled to due process under the Ohio Constitution, which includes the appointment of separate counsel when the child's wishes differ from the guardian's recommendation.
Counsel, how old was the child?
In this case, Your Honor, at the time of the hearing, JAF was 7 years old.
Seven, okay.
Counselor, let me ask this. Does revised code 2151.414A1 require that the trial court know the wishes of the child directly from the child?
Either directly from the child or, I believe, from the guardian ad litem.
No, my question is, the statute says that the court may know the child's wishes directly or through the guardian ad litem. But let's assume, for the sake of argument, that the child's wishes differ from what the guardian thinks is best. Does the statute require that the court know that information? So in other words, if the guardian thinks the child would be better off, you know, adopted or not with the parent, does the statute require that the court know that the child wants something different?
I don't know if the statute specifically actually states that, but I do know, Your Honor, the guardian has a responsibility and an obligation to raise that issue to the judge.
Who has the responsibility? The guardian does?
The guardian. If there's a conflict with the guardian's recommendation and the child's wishes under the rules of superintendence, the guardian has an obligation in their job to raise that issue to the trial court, or I believe the trial court can raise that issue sua sponte on its own.
Can, but does the trial court have the obligation to?
Well, I think it should, but again, going to answer your question, the statute I don't believe specifically states that. However, 2151.352 does specifically state if there's a conflict between the parties, separate counsel must be appointed. And again, this court.
And what I'm getting at is can we ever have the occasion where the trial court does not know what the child, particularly if it's a child of 10 years, would we be in a scenario where the appellate court or this court could not review and the trial court did not know of the child's request being different from what the guardian thinks?
Under the best interest factors, a trial court must consider the child's wishes. Okay. Now, I've read cases, and there are cases out there, unfortunately, where the guardian has failed to interview the children, and the trial court judge may not know. But they are supposed to know. And in this case, they did know, because the guardian ad litem did testify, and she did testify about the child's wishes, JAF, age 7. And according to her, on pages 56 through 58 of the transcript, this child, who seemed very bright, actually, for his age, and there's testimony about that, stated that he, first of all, loved his mother, of course, but in the end, it was her understanding that he wanted to go home with mom. And there was a strong bond between this child and his mother. I don't think anyone's doubting that. He loved his mother. He wanted to go home. He questioned about when he could go home. And the guardian, unfortunately, did not bring it to the court's attention, but the mother did. And the mother raised an objection about appointing counsel for the child, and the trial court simply did nothing. So again, the plain language, not just of the statute, though. We have rules in place set by this court, Rule of Superintendents 48.02D. A plain reading language of that rule states, when the child's wishes differ from the guardian ad litem, separate counsel for the child must be appointed. There's no clarifying language in there, as the Fourth District unfortunately stated, where the child has to repeatedly or consistently or strongly. That is not in this court's decision in Williams. That is not in the statute. That is not in the rule. And it's not in Juvenile Rule 4, A and C.
Counsel, so you're saying that there's one request would be sufficient to get an independent counsel for the child? Or in this case, you're saying it's repeated, but I also thought that there was a focus on, or this child was comfortable where he was with the people who were caring for him and had bonded with them. Is that accurate?
There was testimony, yes, from the guardian that JAF was getting used to his foster home, mm-hmm. and I think he liked those people, but he also expressed his desire to be with mom. So when there is...
Well, to be with mom on a permanent, I want to leave and go back and live with mom, or I want to... What was it?
Sure. Well, the exact testimony was, her understanding was, yeah, he wants to be home with mom. JAF does love his mom, and at this point, by all accounts, it is a matter of he believes that he's going to go home at some point. That's on page 58 of the transcript. One request to answer your question, Your Honor. Yes, it is enough. Our proposition of law is any information brought to the court's attention about a conflict between the guardian recommending permanent custody to the agency versus the child's wishes is enough to trigger separate counsel. Again, under the plain language of the statute and the rules. I would note, again, I know the state talks about this potentially being an immature child. Well, that is not correct. There is evidence in this record to show that JAF was a very bright young man, according to the caseworker on page 19. He has normal development. He's engaged in play therapy. He goes to school, first grade. He's got no known cognitive abilities. He speaks very well for his age.
So, Counselor, two things with that. One, how young is too young for a court to be able to take into consideration a child's wishes? And second, if the child has a lawyer, isn't it the lawyer's responsibility to do what the child wants? And oftentimes, or sometimes, that might not be in the child's best interest. How do we reconcile that?
Sure. Well, unfortunately, in this case, JAF did not have a lawyer, so...
I get that, but that's part of your argument here, right, that he should have had.
Absolutely, because that lawyer, as this court has held, the roles between a guardian ad litem versus a lawyer are completely different.
Correct.
The role of guardian is to help judges, right? The role of the attorney is to help the client.
So if the client wants, in this case, JAF, to be with his mom, but that's not the best interest, would not be in his best interest. Even if the lawyer felt that, the lawyer's obligation would still be to press and fight for JAF to be with his mom.
Absolutely. The lawyer would be able to call witnesses, interview the children, present experts, call experts, issue subpoenas, cross-examine everyone at the hearing. There's no substitute. And this is why the right to counsel in these kind of cases is paramount and fundamental under the Due Process Clause. To answer your second question, I'm sorry.
No, but I guess, Ms. Traynor, but you have the lawyer fighting for what may not be in the best interest of the child. And isn't that what these adjudications are all about, the best interest of the child? Because if a lawyer is advocating for the child's wishes to be with mom, and I'm sure we all understand that desire, if that's really not in the child's best interest, then doesn't that go against what these proceedings are designed to do?
There is certainly a best interest analysis in these kind of proceedings, yes. But the role, again, of the guardian is to help judges. The role of the attorney for the child is to zealously represent the client's, the child's wishes, even though it may not be in his best interest, Your Honor.
But you say that should still happen, and the trial court makes the determination, because the trial court's role is to do what's in the child's best interest.
Ultimately, they will make a decision on that, yes. To answer your second question about the age, there's no really bright-line test about how mature a child can be before he or she expresses his wishes. There are cases out there that have held that ages 4 and 5 are sufficient for the child to express his or her interests and wishes about being with mom or dad.
Counsel, this child was not did not testify at the hearing.
Correct, Your Honor.
But it could have, couldn't it?
The child? I suppose no one called him, though, to testify. And again, he had no lawyer to...
I understand that. But there's no prohibition against a 7-year-old who is bright and, you know, at appropriate age and grade level, like this young child, to come in and testify, correct?
I suppose that's possible, yes, Your Honor. That was not done in this particular case.
Okay, or have a conversation as often done with the judge in chambers.
That also is possible. That did not occur in this case.
Okay. Just hypothetically, would a conversation between the 7-year-old and the judge in chambers be sufficient for the court to know what the child's wishes are?
It would certainly help, and that does happen a lot in camper interviews, as we know. So that could be sufficient, but again, if there's still a conflict, if the court, according to the rules and the statute, if the child's wishes differ from the recommendation of the guardian, that judge must appoint separate counsel for that child.
So, Mr. Miller, under Superintendent Rule 48.02D, the duty of the guardian ad litem is to represent the best interests of the child and to ascertain the wishes of the child. And there's a point then in the subsequent paragraph where if a number of different parties, including the guardian ad litem, believe that a conflict exists, it's at that point that the guardian ad litem or someone else, it's incumbent upon them to ask the court to appoint an attorney for the child. But I think we all can acknowledge that there is sort of this dual role of the guardian ad litem from the get-go. And when the guardian ad litem is spending a sufficient amount of time with the child, you know, a child who may be comfortable, fed, cared for, housed in a foster home and gets promised, if you come and live with me, you get a 4-wheeler, can't the guardian ad litem use their judgment and not immediately have to jump to the fact that this child needs to have a separate attorney because the parents promised them a 4-wheeler?
Sometimes the guardian can act as a dual role, a dual appointment, as the child's representative and the child's attorney. That did not happen in this case. The trial court judge specifically assigned a guardian for the best interest of the child, therefore leaving this child with no attorney whatsoever. But again, it goes back to the role of the guardian versus the attorney, which are very stark differences. I say I'm into my rebuttal time. If there are no further questions,
Thank you. Mr. Archer.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, Mr. Miller, members of the court. May it please the court, my name is William Archer. I am Special Assistant Prosecutor for Jackson County, representing the appellee, Jackson County Job and Family Services in this matter. Would indicate to the court that the track I think that this matter has taken has been for me trying to analyze it. We have the statute that talks about the right to counsel that was interpreted in Williams, and then we've got the rule of superintendents 48.02 that deals with the guardian ad litem and their duties. So let me deal first with Williams and the statutory right to counsel. 2151.352 has never provided for an absolute right to counsel for children. It's always been qualified in that later language. And so when I talk about in my brief that there's no absolute right, it's because it's not, it's an unqualified right, because it there is no right to for children to have an attorney in these situations, except under certain circumstances, and that's what the Williams Court was trying to deal with. This court's now being asked to define, in essence, what certain circumstances are. And I'm going to just come right out, and I would suggest to the court that one of the ways to define it would be as the statute looks at it later on, and it says, counsel must be provided for the child not represented by the child's parent, guardian, or custodian. If the interests of two or more such parties conflict, separate counsel shall be provided for each of them. That right, statutory right to counsel, comes out of the parental relationship, and I would suggest to you that the term guardian there is not referring to a guardian ad litem, or it would have said guardian ad litem. It is simply the parental type relationship. In this particular case, if I could just, if you would bear with me, what the trial court was dealing with, mom had appointed counsel, dad had appointed counsel, and the children had an appointed GAL attorney. All of these people were presenting evidence to the trial court on this motion for permanent custody. Now, dad was pretty much ineffective in all of this because he was already in prison at that point, and reunification would have been essentially impossible with him. But mother was out. Mother was hoping to somehow maybe get the kids back. So she was presenting an argument for reunification, and she testified about the child's wishes. The GAL was charged with looking at the child's best interests as well as the wishes of the child. I think what the statute says is that if that child's interest is being presented by one of the parents, that there's no need for a right of counsel. Mom was presenting the argument, and she had, and through her counsel, that the child did not need an attorney because she was asking for reunification. The scenario that you end up looking at is you could end up having an attorney for the mom, attorney for the dad, and an attorney for each of the children if you took the appellant's view of how this statute should be read. Nowhere does there an indication that there'd be any evidence of a conflict with the GAL. So in this case, you're talking about three attorneys essentially presenting the same argument on the same facts, on the same evidence. And so it certainly doesn't seem to make sense that the statute would call for an appointment of counsel for children in that matter. Then shifting to look at the best interest and the wishes of the child, Rule 4802, and then through the best interest test in 2151.414, look at what the court heard. And I appreciate that the court has indicated some of the transcript information. 7-year-old kid. We know from child development studies that the age range of 2 to 7 is kind of considered the tender years. And so the research is that children in that age group have some ability, some difficulty in lack of reasoning and struggling with causality. And that becomes clear when you just consider JAF, James's circumstance here that he has. He's very bonded with his little brother, JF, who's got incredible physical difficulties. Mom and dad are never going to be able to be reunified with JAF as long as they're using drugs because his DeGeorge syndrome and all of his physical issues require too much time and attention. He knows mom screwed up. Mom's making promises, gets him agitated, promising things and doesn't come through. Then he pitches a fit after the calls or the visitations take place. He never objects, though, to the termination of these visits. He's fine to go back home to the foster home where he calls the foster parent mom. He does well with the foster family. He has a roommate. They share a room. They're very proud to show their room. This is all the information that the GAL provided to the trial court. What GAF could not understand as a 7-year-old, that mom's not completing drug treatment, that mom is still actively using meth, that mom used meth while the kids were in the house, and that due to his brother's extensive medical needs, if he really wants to go live with mom, he is no longer going to be able to be with his little brother, because there's no way that those two are going to be able to be together, because mom and dad will not be able to take the care of the children.
When you say there's no way they could be together, you mean being raised in the same household?
Household, I'm sorry, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because they still can have a relationship.
They can still have a relationship, okay. Yes. They won't grow up together in the same household. Thank you, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I did not mean to imply otherwise. The concerns that we have, from a statutory standpoint, that language in 2151.352, talking about the conflict, is completely unnecessary if there's an absolute right to counsel. So why did the legislature include that in? It is essentially a qualification, and I think that's what this court was looking at in Williams when it talked about certain circumstances. I would suggest again to you, I told Mr. Miller beforehand, you know, we always hear in law school, bad facts make bad law. I've contended with my client that had a memorandum against jurisdiction been filed and the court had been aware about how bad the facts in this case were from mom's perspective, I'm not sure this is the right case to even necessarily address this. But the problem is, like Chief Justice Berger said in his concurrence in Lassiter, you leave it up to the trial judge on a case-by-case basis, and maybe appeal shouldn't be brought when there's no ability for the parent to be reunited with the children. We would ask the court to affirm the Fourth District Court of Appeals.
So, counsel, what I hear you saying is that even under the best of circumstances in this particular case, given the facts, had the child been appointed a lawyer, first of all, there would be redundancy with the testimony of the mother and the activity of her attorney, but it wouldn't have mattered. Even if JAF got on the stand and said in no uncertain terms, I want to go back and live in the trailer with mom. I love my mom. I want to live with her. That would not have mattered because of the situation that the mother has created.
That's correct, Your Honor. And that was what I think was most troubling about all of this, is that the circumstances were just so bad, and that's why the maturity of the child is hard to. I had another judge suggest to me a conditional request is not the same as a wish. And so in this case, the child's statements about what he'd like to have happen did not elevate to a wish, because he just doesn't have the ability to understand the consequences of what his wish meant overall.
Well, and let me ask about this, and I apologize if you stated or made it clear earlier. Do you agree that the statute does require that the child be appointed counsel if the child's wishes directly conflicts with the GAL?
Not if mom and dad are presenting and recognizing and presenting that child's interest. And let me explain how I see this playing in this case. Dad, if it were just dad in this case, trying to get reunified with the children, dad's not going to be able to represent the interests of the child. He's not going to be able to protect that child's interest. So in that essence, there is a conflict for him under the statute, and would be entitled to counsel in that situation. But mom's presenting the same evidence, the same information, and so his side of what he wants is being presented to the court through mom's counsel.
So you're saying the child doesn't have an independent right to counsel?
Unless there is an actual conflict with the parents and their desire, yes.
Not the GAL.
Well, let me address that really quick. The GAL did not file the report until the day of the hearing, and this court has changed the GAL rules. This was before the rules were modified. And frankly, that should have never happened, because the trial court, as you had asked earlier, would have known that there was at least a concern about what the child wished as expressed to the GAL. But that didn't happen here. The report came that day, and it was objected to, but the court overruled, including the GAL report in. I don't foresee that kind of situation happening again as long as the GA rules are filed, because the court will, trial courts will then know, hey, the kid's saying this, GAL's saying this, maybe I better appoint somebody now. So I'm hoping that that doesn't, that's not a future issue. But in this particular case, the GAL looked at the maturity and all the other issues that were going on and did not believe that the child was expressing a desire to absolutely go home, but did miss mom.
Well, that was going to be the next question. And just as a side, so you say the rule change should have never happened?
I'm sorry?
Did you say the rule change that should have never happened as an aside?
No, I think that the updating the GAL requirements to be much more stringent is going to keep this kind of situation
from happening
again, because the report will come to the trial court in advance of the hearing so that there can be some review of this.
Got it.
But in this situation, the GAL report, even though it was filed the day of the hearing, even if they had had it prior to that, it doesn't negate the fact that mom and the child are in sync for the purposes of this hearing.
No, it does not. I would agree. I was more speaking as a overall perspective on these kind of cases.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Miller, you've saved about a minute and 43 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. 2 points. In Williams, decided by this court, the child was 6 years old, and the Court of Appeals in Williams held that when there's a conflict between the guardian ad litem and the child's wishes, separate counsel must be appointed. This court more or less approved that in its 2004 decision. Second of all, to address Chief Justice O'Connor's point about regardless of whether or not the child had an attorney, the outcome would have not been different. That goes to our structural error analysis in our briefs, Your Honors. In summary, we don't believe harmless error is the appropriate standard in this particular case because it's mere speculation. It's impossible to know what an attorney is going to do for a child. I mean, the attorney has so many.
Well, let me ask you about the position of Mr. Archer, that if the mother and the child are in sync on their wishes, and the mother is represented by counsel, and the information is being, gotten out at this hearing, that the mother says, you know, JAF has said he loves me and he wants to be with me, and he's told me that more and, you know, certainly more than once, and I have a good relationship with him, et cetera, et cetera. Is that sufficient to have the child's voice, so to speak, relayed through the mother?
Absolutely not. That goes directly in contravention of the Williams decision, the statute, and rule of superintendents.
Well, the statute talks about a conflict.
Rule of superintendents 40.02d specifically states the plain language reading is if the wishes differ is the word they use, from the guardian, separate counsel must be appointed for the child. So just because mom and child are in sync together, that does not remedy the due process concerns that this court held in Williams. We would ask this court please to reverse the Fourth District Court of Appeals and to clarify the language of the in certain circumstances used in Williams to show when there's any information presented between the child's wishes versus the guardian's recommendation, if there's a difference, separate counsel for the child, that child has a right to counsel. Thank you.
Mr. Miller, 4802D also says, and if the attorney or any other party believes a conflict exists in the dual appointment, wouldn't that include the GAO?
Well, there was not a dual appointment in this case.
But I understand, but the fact that the GAL is to represent the best interests of the child and ascertain the wishes of the child, there is for a period of time kind of a dual appointment that until a conflict exists. And so I guess I'm not reading the rule the same way you are. Is there anything you can say to help me?
I'm out of time. May I please answer the question?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. Again, yes, 48.02D, a court shall appoint a separate attorney to represent a child in these kind of cases in which the wishes of the child differ from the recommendations of the GAL, period. I'm just reading the plain language of that rule. And again, Your Honor, I understand what you're saying. There was no dual appointment in this case. There was no attorney appointed to represent the child in this case. And the roles of a guardian, again, versus the attorney who should zealously represent that child's wishes was not abided by in this case.
Guardian was an attorney, though, correct?
She was, yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.